All right, we're going to go ahead and call to order the Judson Canyon Public Infrastructure District number 1. Today's August 25th, 2026, 2:10 p.m. I'm Michael Jensen with Snow Jensen and Reese. So for the call to order, if everybody could state their name for the recording, we'll start with the board. Kent, your vice chair, do you want to start for us?
Sure. Kent Olson with the Judson Canyon Group.
David Calder with the Judson Canyon Group.
And this is Matt Entz with Snow Jensen and Reese District Legal Counsel.
Tyler King with Snow Jensen and Reese.
Shelby Clymer with CLA District Accountant.
All right, Harold and John, your guys' turn.
Harold Patterson with Patterson Enterprises.
John Roscoe, Director of Finance, Patterson Enterprises.
All right, that's everyone I show on the call. We do have Christy Barker back at the anchor location. Christy, do we have any members of the public?
No.
Okay. So, board, first off, board meeting minutes from our last meeting on May 12th. Have you guys had a chance to review those? Do they look accurate?
Yeah, they look fine to me.
Okay.
Yes.
Could I get a motion, Dave?
I will make a motion that we approve the board meeting minutes held on May 12th, 2026.
Thanks, David.
I'll second.
Thanks, Kent. All those in favor say aye.
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 All right, Shelby,
Yeah,
take it away.
sorry, Michael, didn't mean to cut you off. I will provide an update. So I communicated to David and Kent, I guess it's probably been a couple of months ago, that we were putting kind of a pause on the services that we were providing to the district. Just due to kind of the outstanding balances that we had and kind of pending the sale of the property and the development. I did just see that payment came through yesterday, which I wasn't aware was kind of officially on its way. So with that, we will kind of get working right away to get the quarter two financials prepared, kind of bring everything current. So with that, I don't have anything to present or cover officially today, but if there's kind of any questions on what we need to work on now, I'm happy to answer those.
So with that, I would recommend we just
Table them.
table the outstanding items for the second quarter financials, and then work on transitioning the board to the new property owner's control, and then we can come back and have the new board approve those, unless there's any objection to that. The alternative we could do is give Shelby's team some time to put those together and then come back, in however long, Shelby, you'd think you need, a week or two or whatever it is, bring back the old board to approve those, since it's stuff that applies to the old board's tenure, and then we could do the changeover. So it is going to take a little bit of time do the board changeover, just because the new board members will have to be appointed by the Apple Valley Town Council, and we can talk about that some more, but we'll just have to coordinate with them on their town council schedule. So I imagine it, probably be at least 30 days or so before we can get that officially done. So I don't know, current board, do you have any preference on that? And Shelby, I don't know how much time you need to get ready.
I think we could certainly be ready, I would say, kind of that week of Labor Day, right after Labor Day, if the board wants to try to reconvene in a couple weeks.
I don't think we really have a preference, Matt. So kind of whatever you guys recommend and what works for Shelby.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I'd say unless Harold and his team have a strong preference, I think it'd be appropriate for the current board to consider the financials, these particular financials, just because they are looking back and not forward. So that's what I would recommend, is we just have a quick board meeting in a couple of weeks. Have the current board approve, second quarter financials, and then depending on how quickly we can get it done, we could maybe potentially, seat the new board at that point, or we could do that in a subsequent meeting. So
Okay, that works for us.
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't we do that? So, Christy, that'll did we lose? Oh no, Christy's still there. Christy, that'll fall to you to maybe send out a couple of times. Maybe same time in a couple of weeks. See if that works for everybody on this call. But okay, if there's no,
So,
oh, go
what
ahead.
I was just going to say, Matt, is we just need a motion to table
Yeah,
the quarterly expenditures and financial statements.
Okay, I'll make a motion that we quarter the second quarter financials and statements and give CLA some time to put it together.
Thanks, David.
I'll second.
Thanks, Kent. All those in favor say aye.
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 Right, that's unanimous. So, what else, Matt? Sorry.
No, that's okay. I think maybe I'll just lead off the discussion about the transition. Obviously, Harold and his I assume a company that that Harold used to purchase the property is now the owner of the property, correct? The closing happened last week, I believe.
That's correct.
Okay. 13th and 14th, yeah.
Okay, great. So now that that has occurred, the Utah law regarding the qualifications to serve on a PID board is interesting in that when there are no residents within the PID boundaries or no registered voters within the PID boundaries, to be more precise, that the only people really qualified to serve on the board are representatives of the property owner. And so now that we have a new property owner, there's an opportunity for Harold as the new property owner to basically select who he wants to serve on the board. Obviously, subject to approval of Apple Valley Town. This particular PID, some of our PIDs we've been transitioning to allow them to appoint their own replacement board members. Frankly, where this is probably, I assume, is going to be a full replacement of all three board members, probably makes the most sense to have the town approve it anyway, just because we're not, filling a vacant, filling one vacancy, or, we're doing a wholesale replacement. And so I mentioned that there are three board members, so three seats. Harold, you and your team can basically nominate who you want to fill those three seats. We would put together the documentation that would be submitted to the town, and we would request to be placed on their next town council agenda to approve those nominations to the board. Typically, what we like to do, we don't need a lot of information, but we find that town and city councils, when they're asked to do this, they like to know just a little bit about the people that they're appointing. And so we find that if we just provide a short, maybe a short paragraph with some information about each of the people nominated to serve on the board, then that smooths the process a little bit because the town council feels like they're appointing real people and not just names. So that's what we would ask for, Harold, is if you would put together a list of nominees and have them, or if you would provide, a short paragraph about each person. Doesn't have to be anything fancy, maybe just a little bit about their work experience, possibly educational experience, whatever you think. The board is not it's not a compensated position. And actually, by law, the board can't be compensated for their service as board members unless they're actually residents. So down the road, when the board transitions to an elected board and residents of the project are actually elected, they're entitled to compensation or can be compensated. But with a property owner controlled board, they actually can't be compensated. So that's just one thing to be aware of. So it's pretty straightforward. Again, what we do is we take the information that you give us about the nominated board members, we put that in the form of a resolution that the town the town council can consider. So we try to make it really easy for them so they don't have to do a lot of work other than just have it on their agenda and vote. So it's a pretty straightforward process. We will assume, unless the new board directs us, we will assume that, we're just going to stay the course as far as the current contracts that are in place, like our engagement and Shelby's engagement. The other things we have is we have insurance that's currently in place, and we assume will be ongoing. So the new board, of course, will have its own business judgment and can make decisions if there are changes that it would like to make. But until we're directed otherwise, we'll assume, that we're staying the course on all those things. And maybe I'll stop talking for a second and just see if anybody has any questions about the process or anything else that might be related to the transition.
Just one other thing, Harold, whoever you propose to be a board member, they just have to be a registered voter at their place of residence. That doesn't have to be in Utah, it doesn't have to be within the boundaries of the district, just as long as they're a registered voter wherever the heck they live.
Good point.
Proposal.
So, typically, if it's really easy to show status as a registered voter, at least in Utah, there's a website that someone can go to, put in their information, and it'll say, yes, you're a registered voter. We just ask for a screenshot of that, or so that we can show the town that the board members are eligible to serve. So, thanks, Tyler. I had forgotten to mention that.
Got it.
Yeah, the one of our associates went and visited the mayor, and he was kind of down on the project because he's afraid we're gonna build it and move in a bunch of Democrats. He said, "We might want to make sure we put Republicans on there so that they'll pass on the
Yeah.
nut, shut us down."
Any evidence of supporting Trump would go a long way
We'll submit headshot photos, and everybody can wear their MAGA hats.
Yeah, there you
There we
go. Yeah.
go.
That I was going to ask about that, Matt. Have you encountered any resistance from from towns when you've had to do this in other places?
Not any significant resistance. We've obviously had questions, about why are we doing this? Why are we doing this instead of somebody else? They don't always understand what their responsibility is there, but it's pretty easy for us, to point to the statute and the governing documents and say, well, you're the creating entity, and so you have to do this. Now, I did mention that with a lot of our district clients, the state code does now allow PID boards to appoint essentially fill their own vacancies. Which, with a lot of our districts, we've gone back to the creating entity, the town or city, and we've had them approve amendments to the governing documents that allow us to do that. And there's various reasons for that, why they've been willing to do that. We haven't done that with this district at any point, and so that's why we're still, our only option is to go back to the town. But again, this is a little bit unique situation because we're not just filling a vacancy. We're basically replacing the board wholesale. And so I think it makes a lot of sense. It gives us an opportunity also just to make sure the town's aware of what's going on, and that we're being responsible as far as making sure the right people are running the district. So and thankfully we have a pretty good relationship with the mayor and with the town clerk, and so I don't think we'll have any significant difficulty with this.
Do you think it makes sense to do that amendment at the same time? So in the future, Harold can replace somebody and, I don't know if, the town will be skeptical of that, if they want to control it or not, but, I wonder if it makes sense if you're doing it now just to
Yeah.
in the future.
It's not a bad idea. Basically, the two key things that we've been changing in most governing documents is originally our governing documents would say that we had an obligation to submit an annual report to the creating entity. So, and Michael's been doing this mostly for all of our districts. Every year he prepares and sends a report to the town or the city, whoever created the district. Because that creates the impression that the town or city or county has some responsibility for the district, we've been trying to get away from that so that our districts are clearly separate, from the towns and cities. There's been some controversy with the state auditor who has, the state auditor's taken the position that a lot of PIDs have to be considered, quote, what's I'm
Component
suddenly
units.
it's yeah component units of the creating entity, which means that the town or city has to include something about the PID's finances on their finances, and they hate that. So we've been eliminating the annual reporting requirement. We've also been creating this opportunity for our district boards to appoint their own replacements, meaning we don't have to go back to the town or the city. Again, just the idea of creating more separation. And for the most part, because of the controversy, because of the, things that the state auditor has been saying, every town or city or county that we've approached about this has basically said, yeah, we want to do that, because they don't want any responsibility for these districts. They have enough on their plates, and they want to, if there's some kind of an issue, they want to have separation so that they aren't responsible for it.
I see in Arizona a lot, there's been a lot of land that has changed hands from one jurisdiction to another, a lot of annexation and de-annexation. And there'll be situations where one town annexes a portion of land, but the school district within that land still belongs to the old jurisdiction. So like in situations like that, what happens when a district changes hands from one jurisdiction to the other, but the creating entity is still the old jurisdiction? Do you
Wow, that's actually a really good question. I can honestly say that's not an issue that we've ever had to deal with. But if I was pressed and had to make a prediction, I would say just based on the way the statute is written, it calls everything back to the creating entity. So even if the land was moved from, let's use an example that's applicable to this property. Let's say Apple Valley just decided to disconnect this project and make it unincorporated county. I actually don't think under the statute as it's currently written that would relieve Apple Valley, the town council, from its responsibility to appoint new boards and so on. Just based on the way the statute is currently written, it doesn't address, what happens if something moves like that. So it's an interesting issue. Like I said, not one with, we've got around 40 plus active districts across the state that have issued bonds, and a bunch more that are either in the process or may issue bonds in the future. So, knock on wood, we haven't dealt with that issue yet.
But the creating entity as it stands now doesn't really have to do any assessing or carry any responsibility. That would fall to the county, right?
Right. Yeah. So, like with this PID, the county does all of the property tax collection. They include the PID property tax amount on their annual property tax statements that they send out. So that's not something that we have to do. Now, there are some districts who have also levied special assessments, which are, just another potential source of revenue aside from property taxes. Because special assessments are not administered by the county, in those circumstances, generally, there's someone who helps the district administer those assessments. And that would be like Shelby's firm or someone else, another firm that does that. Hit this particular district has not done special assessments, so the only revenue that this district currently has is the property tax revenue that's administered by the county.
Would there be the possibility of doing a special assessment? Would the charter allow that, something like that?
Yeah, potentially. I don't think there's anything in the governing document that would prevent us from that. Typically, over the years, we've left the option to do that open. There's a bunch of questions about whether that would make sense in terms of whether you could, do a marketable bond issuance on the basis of special assessments. And that's just a project by project question that we'd have to have the help of of the bond underwriters to determine. But just legally speaking, I don't know of any reason why this PID couldn't do a special assessment if you chose to.
So, absent any special assessment with the original issuance, could you remind me and also for John's benefit being on the call, what the triggers are for the next milestones and what could trigger the next round of funding?
And that's really that question is really dependent on sort of subjective factors. And what I mean by that is whether this district does another round of funding at some point depends on whether the circumstances would allow a new bond to be marketed and sold to the bond market. And typically what that means on a second bond issuance, here there's already been a bond issuance that was complete. Obviously it's being repaid now with the property taxes. So the question becomes, when can you do a second bond issuance? That really depends on a couple of factors. One, can you create an additional revenue stream to support those new bonds? And that's where a special assessment might come in. Two, whether the original bonds are being fully, serviced with the property taxes that are already being collected. Here, that's a little bit of a challenge because obviously development hasn't proceeded the way it was originally projected, and so property tax collections are way down below projected amounts. I know that's one of the, when there's been discussions with the bond underwriters in the past, that's been one of their big concerns, and they just say, until there's some significant development activity, there's probably not an opportunity to do a second bond issuance. And again, that just comes down to would you be able to convince bond buyers to buy that bond? And so I would say those are the two big factors. We do have the district does have the ability to create that additional revenue stream through special assessments. But whether that bond offering would be marketable or not is, I think, the key question. And again, that's going to have to come down to a conversation with those that would be going out into the market and sell it, and that'd be the bond underwriters.
Yeah.
So,
Is it a bit formulaic in nature where they would evaluate the as completed development and then determine a portion that would be allowable as taxable valuation?
yeah, in fact, with special assessments, that's exactly how they do it. What would typically happen is there would be obviously they would take your entire development plan, and you would go out and get an appraisal, not of the property as it currently is, but of the property value once all of the infrastructure improvements are put in for that project. So the idea is being, what's the increased value of the property or the projected value of the property going to be once all of this financed infrastructure is going to go in? And then you can basically finance a third of that amount with special assessments. And so that would be your limit. That would be what you could the amount that you could seek in a new bond issuance would be basically a third of the projected value of the developed property. So yeah, that's generally, and I obviously I'm, way oversimplifying this, but that's generally how it would work.
So just to distill that down, like if we got an appraisal that says as completed with this infrastructure completed, it would appraise for 30 million. We've already pulled down 10 something around 10 million from the bid, right? So that would already be fully subscribed. So you'd have to be able to say it would appraise for 60 million to be able to pull more down.
Not necessarily. My understanding is that evaluation that they do for special assessments is actually independent of any of the debt that's already been issued and being repaid by the property taxes.
Okay. So if you had a if you had an as completed of 30, you could go do 10 right away then.
And yeah, if it was going to be supported by a separate special assessment. Again, this is all generalities. We always defer to the bankers on these kinds of questions, but generally speaking, I think that's true. And Shelby and Michael, anyone else that has any thoughts on it, I'm certainly not meaning to monopolize if anybody else has any ideas.
I was just gonna say we should adjourn the meeting, but still leave open so we can end the recording and then continue on with answering questions.
Yeah, we could do that.
All right. What I need then is a motion to adjourn. Kent, you're on mute, but I could see you made the
Just saw
motion.
that. I moved that we adjourned the meeting. Sorry about that.
Thanks, Kent.
I'll second that.
Thanks, David. All those in favor say aye.
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 All right.